considered as a scholar who has studied the book and the sunnah, and he's expert in that. And because he has expertise and we don't have, we consider his fatwa, his jurisdiction, actually his rulings,
yes,
as the sunnah,
mm-hmm,
and as the words of God, in a sense that this man is trying to find the words of God.
That's right.
And the prophet. So there is a limit for that. If that person is going to go beyond the limit,
mm-hmm,
he will lose his authority and religious authority. So
okay,
he is not a religious authority anymore.
Yes. Okay.
So people should think. People are not blindly to follow anyone.
Sorry,
Shaykh. Responsibility here.
Okay.
IRIB English Radio presents questions and answers on Islamic beliefs. Answering your theological questions in questions and answers on Islamic beliefs. Send us your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
We can't say this has always been the case during the history of the religions of the world. I mean, there have been always some messengers who have been sent directly from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with different miracles, with different books and the original pure messages. But at the same time, there have been some people around, okay, who did not have enough knowledge. So a kind of pessimism was created among the people around and the ummah and the community. Now the question is that can people, for example, say that we want the pure religion of God or Allah on earth, and for us without the names? I mean, without these labels of, for example, faqih or jurisprudence or Christianity, Judaism or Islam. Is it true?
Actually, this might be in vacuum,
mm-hmm,
but on the ground, you don't have such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
On the ground, because by religion, what do we mean by religion? In the previous session, we said the definition of religion is important because what is your expectation from religion? If your expectation is just to have a mere kind of spirituality in your life, you have some food, you have a car, you have a house, and also you need to have some spiritual feelings.
Yes.
Now here you may read some poems, you may read, you may do painting, you may go to some, you know, yoga classes, or you may have some religious experiences and practices.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody is looking at the religion from that perspective, so yeah, they can do that, and lots of people do this. But if you believe in the life to come, I mean the hereafter, and if we believe that man is in a journey, and if we believe that man in this journey should achieve perfection, and if there is going to be any failure to achieve the perfection, then man is going to suffer because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And to get that and to have that, if we know that man doesn't have enough knowledge about it, then we see that we have to look for someone who can guide us in this journey. And we have to make sure that the one who is going to guide us, they know the journey and the well-being of man in the other realm of life, that we have no way to experience anything about it. Because in this world, we can experience things, and through, you know, test and error, we can find the way towards that. But we have not seen the life to come, and we have not, we don't have a knowledge. So the knowledge should come from Allah, from the God, from the one who has set up this journey for us.
Yes.
Then we have to make sure that the knowledge which is being given to us is pure one.
Mm-hmm.
And then how can we say that? So we have to make sure that the one who is teaching us, this is the pure knowledge. So here we cannot just play, you know, with the knowledge. So it matters a lot that if this religion, a specific religion, I don't want to mention the name, this or that, are giving me something, what is the authenticity for this? How can I trust on them? So
yes.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Quran says you have to worship God and Then he says, ذَلَكَ بِأَنَّ اللَّهَ هُوَ الْحَقِّ, because Allah is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Means that you have to make sure that whatever you are doing and whatever you are practicing is the truth. The people may differ according to the capacity they had, the potentiality which was there, the facilities which were possible at their disposal. They may reach to different levels of the truth. And if they have done their best, they are excused for that,
mm-hmm.
for the missing part.
Okay.
But that is another issue. So we might have lots of people who purely, with very pure intention, they follow different religions, a type of people who have no bias against the truth if they find it.
Very good.
So those people are excused according to our understanding. The Quran says, yes, such people who are open to the truth,
mm-hmm.
even if they happen not to find it, they are excused because they opened their hearts towards the truth and they looked for that the life, but they didn't have a chance. They were not lucky enough to find the truth.
Yes.
So those people are excused. But if somebody can find the truth, if there is a way for them,
mm-hmm.
so they cannot just easily, you know, take it easy and to say that, okay, whatever comes around is okay.
Or at least there is an enmity between them or the concept of deen or religion of Allah, isn't it? I mean, they show oppression or something like that, or enmity towards a religion. Can we say that they are acting against their own fitra, isn't it?
No, I mean, we're talking about those people who look for the truth.
Mm-hmm.
We say that if people are really looking for the truth, then they are excused. But
yes.
And if they fall short in finding it, and while they did their best, then they have a chance.
Uh-huh.
They have a chance to get something from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that people shouldn't be difficult. This is important. They shouldn't be difficult. But lots of the time, it happens that people are difficult against the truth.
Yes.
When it comes to my religion, my people, my nation, uh-huh. my label, my position. So the selfish issues, when it comes in, then you see that they marginalize the truth in the decision-making of human being. And here is the place that man is of no excuse,
yes.
when they fail to find the truth and practice the truth.
Okay.
So one element, because why there are different religions and people differ in the way that they found the religions, I said, usually after the prophets to come, there are people around that for their different intentions, sometimes they lacked enough knowledge, sometimes they had their own selfish issues. So they started different classes and schools within a religion, and they ignoring people, they didn't know which one to follow. So some people happened to follow this one, some others the other one. Here, different schools of thought were formed, while if they really were about to be sincerely
mm-hmm.
looking for the truth, it might not be like that. Allah the Almighty had the intention to teach man in a gradual sense. So mm-hmm. there was a graduation in sending the message. Allah
yes.
considers all religions to be one religion and calls it Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And this Islam that was sent to Prophet Adam, and later on it was developed according to, as Quran says, Sharia, these do's and don'ts start from Nuh alayhi salam.
Okay.
Apparently, before Nuh, there is no Sharia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a kind of very simple okay. kind of religion.
That's right.
And it's gradually it expanded. At the time of Ibrahim alayhi salam, it expands more.
Yes.
The prophets of determination, each one coming, it's a kind of a turning point in
yes.
the Islam. And Prophet Muhammad, as the last one, he brought the full perfect form of Islam. The religion, when it comes, Allah calls it Islam, means to be submitted to Allah, to be in full submission to the God. But this comes in a process of a graduation and getting towards perfection.
That's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Al-Mahmadi, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept of religion and the gradual perfection of the concept of religion. It was very kind of you, Sheikh.
Pleasure.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstudy.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
As the world celebrated 30 years since the end of apartheid in South Africa, protesters assembled in their thousands in London calling for an end to the Israeli apartheid and echoing the global demand for a ceasefire in Gaza.
We are here to call for the victory of the Palestinian struggle, that for us it means the end of this genocidal war against Gaza, against the West Bank for us, and against all the Palestinian people.
It's not in our name. We are selling, England is selling arms to Israel, and it's got to stop. They're creating genocide, and we don't want any part of it.
At the destination of the march in Hyde Park, speaker after speaker, including Northern Ireland's First Minister Michelle O'Neill, called out the American, European and British government's complicity in the Israeli regime's crimes.
Peace is always possible.
The march came only weeks after the British Prime Minister gave a Downing Street address condemning extremism and saying the protests risked descending into mob rule, and his counter-extremism commissioner claimed London was becoming a no-go zone for Jews on Saturdays. That received pushback from a number of Jewish community leaders and members. And so the tussle between pro-Palestine marchers exercising their freedom of speech and those who want to cancel those marches continue.
The main theme of this protest, as with the previous ones, the killing of so many civilians in the Gaza Strip, and the continued UK military and diplomatic support for the Israeli regime. There's also an element of defiance, too, to all the attempts that have been made to disrupt and to antagonize these protests. The protesters here are saying they aren't going anywhere and that they will be coming back again and again as long as the massacre continues. Saeed Pereza, London.
In South Korea Saturday, protesters of U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza marched past the U.S. Embassy and through Seoul's downtown. Abuse and arrests of pro-Palestinian demonstrators at American colleges resonated with South Korean students.
Politicians and the media, in their attempt to justify such a crackdown, slander the Palestinian Solidarity Movement as spreading anti-Semitism. But history will remember them as accomplices in genocide.
This is the 32nd rally of South Korea's people in solidarity with Palestine, protesting against Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza. As more and more reports surface outlining Israeli atrocities there, concern here grows over the situation in Rafah and Israel's increasing attacks against civilians there. Participants call for a stoppage to Israel's imminent ground invasion of Rafah. At Seoul National University, a professor is under investigation for defacing a pro-Palestine poster after harassing a student. Such pressure tactics are seen by some demonstrators as an opportunity to set the record straight.
The professor, who's a Zionist, obviously, is trying to silence our voices about speaking up about against the genocide that is happening in Gaza and the occupation of Palestine. But at the same time, I feel like this is a chance for us to raise more awareness about what is happening and about why Zionism is, why Zionism is bad.
Meanwhile, at the United Nations, the United States became even more isolated, vetoing the April 18th resolution to extend full membership to Palestine, with several U.S. allies, including South Korea, voting in favor. Frank Smith, Seoul.
While most Syrians are suffering from difficult economic conditions due to unlawful sanctions imposed by the United States and its Western allies, The U.S. has intensified its thievery of Syrian resources from the areas it illegally occupies in eastern Euphrates. Civil sources from Al-Yarubiya in the Hasakeh countryside reported that the U.S. occupation forces have transported dozens of trucks and tanks loaded with wheat, gas and oil to its bases in Iraqi territory in the past few weeks.
According to the Ministry of Oil, the total losses in the energy sector until 2022 amounted to more than $107 billion, including over $24 billion from oil and gas theft, over $3 billion due to infrastructure destruction, and over $80 billion in indirect losses resulting from the necessity of compensating for the missing resources through imports.
The U.S. occupies Syrian territory under the pretext of fighting the Daesh terrorist group, which Washington itself created.
The United States claimed to establish an international coalition to fight Daesh, while in fact they assassinated those who defeated this organization and fought for the freedom and safety of the Syrian people, including the martyred Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and several Iranian generals, in addition to targeting the Syrian Arab army.
Syrians believe that the main reason for the United States' occupation of Syrian territories is the theft of its wealth and the destruction of its infrastructure. Syrians say the U.S. wants to weaken the state and its army, but furthermore to push the Syrian people away from Palestine and the excess of resistance in order to protect the Israeli regime.
They're doing this just to increase the prestige around the Syrian people, to suffocate the Syrian people more, to increase their suffering, and plus trying to diminish the Syrian role among the resistance countries in the region.
Syria's government, as well as other countries, have repeatedly condemned the ongoing violations by the U.S. as they blatantly steal Syrian wealth before the whole world without consequences, violating all international laws and forcing over 90% of the Syrian people to live below the poverty line, according to UN.
Despite the unjust Western sanctions on Syria, the theft of its national resources and the occupation of its land, the Syrian people's commitment to the Palestinian cause has grown stronger. Syrians are also determined to expel the U.S. and Israeli occupiers through resistance. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Amid rising tensions in the international waterways and the departure of several Western warships from the Red Sea, thousands of Yemenis filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities across the country in yet another strong show of support for Palestine.
We took to the streets to protest for the women and children who are being killed by American and British weapons. Our naval forces will firmly continue operations as long as the aggression against the people of Gaza continues. And if the Yemenis are given the opportunity, there will be thousands of them rushing to fight for Palestine.
The Yemeni people are supporting and standing with our brothers in Gaza, and no sanction or action by United States and the United Kingdom will stop the Yemeni people. Yemeni people in Sana'a and other city continue and demonstrate weekly.
Protesters endorsed the Yemeni army's recent naval operations against Israeli-bound ships. They urged their armed forces to continue attacking the Israeli regime and its Western benefactors.
We support our naval and aerial forces operations, and we urge the army to continue destroying the enemies and do not allow any American, British or Israeli ship to pass through our waters. Our army has targeted more than 100 ships, and the number will double unless the killing of the people of Gaza stops. We are ready to go and fight for the Palestinians in Gaza, and we promise that we can make Israel disappear.
In the latest development, the Yemeni army spokesman announced the targeting of the Israeli ship MSC Darwin in the Gulf of Aden with multiple drones and naval missiles. The Yemeni armed forces have also launched several ballistic missiles toward the Israeli-occupied city of Eilat.
Every week, Yemenis hold fresh rallies across the country to express their solidarity with Palestinians amid the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. People here vow that they will continue their support for Palestinians until the full liberation of the occupied territories. Abdul Latif Roshali, Sana'a.
On Friday, a new national transport strike caused major disruptions in several Italian cities, including Rome, Milan and Naples. The four-hour industrial action called by the trade union FISA Confil affected local bus, metro and tram services, with strike timetables varying from city to city. The strike coincided with the super long weekend of April 25th, or Liberation Day, a time when tourists flock to Italian cities. Confil FISA said that the nationwide strike is in protest over a number of issues ranging from job security and better working conditions to safety in the workplace.
Decades of wild privatization policies and budget cuts due to austerity measures have resulted in an overall precarization of the labor market. Workers' rights have been eroded, with severe consequences on wage security and living conditions.
The public transport sector, together with the health sector, has been the number one victim of budget cuts by consecutive governments under the pretext of promoting efficiency in the public administration. This strategy has not worked, as the current little public funding of private transport groups has to include a profit for the group itself. Thousands of bus drivers have been bearing the brunt for this enormous budget downside. They work more hours for less money. A bus driver earns roughly 1,600 euros a month, but half of their pay goes into house rent or loan repayments.
And then there is the economic crisis that is plaguing Italy. Italians are grappling with serious economic hardships. The cost of living due to high inflation and high energy prices is biting hard in Italy, with an increasing number of families struggling to make ends meet. At the end of 2023, the number of people living in absolute poverty rose to almost 6 million, about 10% of the population, its highest level in about a decade. This, as about 6 more million Italians live in a state of relative poverty.
Our institutions are covering up the reality of the situation. All prices have been dramatically going up since the start of the war in Ukraine. The cost of fuel and that of tomatoes, vegetables, have gone up big time. What have not gone up is salaries and wages for the vast majority of the population.
Earlier this week, the European Parliament adopted a reform of the EU's rules for national debt and deficits. Some analysts have slammed these new rules, saying that they will once again impose a fiscal straitjacket on member states' national budgets, promoting short-term thinking and not safeguarding public investment in social welfare. Max Civili, Turin.
As Iran marks the anniversary of the failed U.S. military operation in the central Tabas Desert, people in the country say the Sands were the agents of God. A memorial ceremony was held in the capital, Tehran, with the event highlighting the budged American operation, in which U.S. choppers crashed in the desert.
On April 24, 1980, the U.S. military carried out a covert operation in Iran by the order of President Jim Carter. The operation, dubbed Eagle's Claw, failed due to major sandstorms in the central Tabas Desert. The failed operation resulted in the death of American soldiers. Iranians believe the Sands were the agents of God.
The botched American mission was an attempt to release 52 staff of the U.S. Embassy, known as the Den of Espionage, who had been held after the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
The incident of Tabas was a helping hand from the Almighty God to defend the great nation of Iran. And also the late founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, said the Sands were appointed by God. Even the Sand rose in support of the Iranian nation. And that bitter incident happened in the American regime.
Unlike the previous years, this year's memorial isn't just a history lesson. It is also an opportunity to reflect on Iran's recent anti-Israel retaliatory attack, dubbed Operation True Promise, which showed the true power of Iran's military forces. Since the failed U.S. Operation Eagle Claw, Iran has boosted and upgraded its defense capabilities and can now stand up to all kinds of threats.
authorities and civilians, we will not hesitate to retaliate from our own land. The True Promise operation was executed in a specific manner which is classified right now. We use scores of drones, crews and ballistic missiles with proper timing to successfully penetrate the complicated Israeli air defense systems and strike our targets with pinpoint accuracy.
Iran has shown that threats from its enemies have only strengthened its will to defend what belongs to the nation. And now it seems that the West has woken up to Iran's military powers after Operation True Promise.
Reza Hashemi, Tehran.
A recent United Nations report predicts that approximately 16 million individuals in Afghanistan will be struggling to gain access to food this year. To get a better understanding of the situation, we visited a family in Kabul facing acute food shortages. The Rukhsana family's daily struggle mirrors the difficulties faced by countless households across the country.
I lost my husband during the war in our hometown. I don't have a male provider and I can't find a source of income. One of my grandkids polishes boots, but that is not enough for our family. It has been a long time since the last time we had rice and potatoes in our home. We barely eat two meals a day, which is stale breads and tea. My children are asking for soup and I feel so bad as I can't make it for them.
Our situation here is so difficult that we can hardly survive. It is because there is no income or food to eat. If we eat during the day, we should sleep with empty stomachs at night. There are people who skip meals to feed their children. Some families beg for food but fail to find some because almost no one has a better situation. We used to receive some aid from the United Nations World Food Program, but now it is gone and has left people to their fate.
According to the UN report, the Afghan population cannot fulfill essential needs, including health care, food, employment, and shelter. Some local experts argue that the current hardships faced by Afghans stem from prolonged foreign interventions and conflicts, suggesting that those involved bear a responsibility to aid in the crisis resolution.
I think all the misery and economic hardships that Afghans are going through today stem from the shameful U.S.-West intervention and wars in Afghanistan. If they had let us build constructive economic relations with our neighbors, we would not be so broken today. The U.S. and its allies are responsible because they came and destroyed our infrastructure here, and on the other hand, they imposed economic sanctions after their withdrawal. Today, they cannot turn a blind eye on what they have created.
As the international community's attention shifts away from Afghanistan and the foreign aid continues to shrink, the Afghan people still hope for a means of survival that will pull them back from the edge of crisis. Millions of Afghans are facing emergency levels of food insecurity and malnutrition. The UN agencies warn that the situation is expected to worsen rapidly if urgent action are not taken by the global community. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Dozens of organizations marched in Paris against Islamophobia and racism as Israel's attempted genocide and ethnic cleansing has caused increased state-sponsored repression against Europe's largest Muslim community. A main theme of the march was protecting children. Since October 7th, children as young as 10 years old have been charged with so-called apology for terrorism, while a child of 8 was falsely targeted for praying during recess. Scandals like those have many saying that non-white children are no longer being treated like children, but instead like suspected fanatics, delinquents, and full-grown adults.
We Muslims are enduring so much Islamophobia these days, and it's not like there wasn't a lot of Islamophobia in France already. The targeting of our children is a step too far, and it's incredible that they have taken this shameful step.
As France is accused of targeting Muslim children at home, their elite are giving military and political cover to Israel's mass murder in Gaza of an estimated 15,000 children and the orphaning of some 20,000 others.
On les bombarde.
It's totally unjust how we are watching murder, torture, and the bombing of embassies, and nobody is allowed to say anything. We're here to say, stop the violence against Palestinian and Iranian people.
A decade ago, during another Israeli invasion of Gaza, France became the first country to ever ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. They banned pro-Palestinian demonstrations for a month after the counterattack by Hamas on October 7th, handing out hundreds of thousands of euros in fines and making mass arrests. Police initially banned this march, claiming it was a threat to public order and possibly anti-Semitic. That was overturned at the last moment, but many say the effort is proof of a long-running double standard against non-whites and non-Jews.
C'est des antisémites. Ça, c'est n'importe quoi.
Anytime there is a march about Palestine or Islamophobia, the interior minister in whatever administration seeks to ban it. The idea that we are anti-Semitic is total nonsense. I get the feeling that I'm more French than many others who aren't of Algerian descent as I am, because many have totally abandoned the longtime values of French political culture.
Similar to during France's two-year state of emergency starting in November 2015, many have been shocked by the lack of outcry at this latest targeting of the Muslim community, despite perpetual bragging of being the alleged birthplace of human rights. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Iran's defense minister has emphasized in a meeting with his Chinese counterpart the importance of enhancing cooperation and convergence between Tehran and Beijing, working on security issues in the region as well as the wider world. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. Iran and China's defense chiefs discuss ways to enhance military cooperation, also conferring on regional issues. Iran's defense minister, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani, met with his Chinese counterpart, Dong Jun, on the sidelines of the 21st meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Defense Ministers meeting in Astana, Kazakhstan, on Friday. Defense Minister Brigadier General Ashtiani hailed China's stance on the ongoing developments in the region and its condemnation of Israel's terrorist airstrike against Iran's diplomatic premises in the Syrian capital Damascus earlier this month. It is necessary for Iran and China to boost cooperation and convergence to solve security issues in the region and across the world, Iran's defense minister emphasized. On 1st of April, the Israeli regime carried out a terrorist airstrike on the consular section of Iran's embassy in the Syrian capital Damascus, which killed two Iranian generals, members of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, and General Muhammad Hadi Haji Rahimi, as well as five other IRGC officers. In retaliation, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC, targeted the occupied Palestinian territories on 13th of April with a barrage of drones and missiles. The retaliatory strikes, dubbed Operation True Promise, inflicted damage on Israeli military bases across the occupied Palestinian territories. Following the reprisal, Iran warned Israel against taking any retaliatory action and also urged the United States to try not to involve itself in the conflict and signaled that it viewed the matter as concluded. China supports Iran's retaliatory airstrikes against Israel. The Chinese Defense Minister Dong Jun, for his part, slammed Israel's attack on Iran's diplomatic premises in Damascus, which he said violated international laws. China supports Iran's legitimate right to respond to Israel, Dong added. He invited his Iranian counterpart, Brigadier General Ashtiani, to take part in a security conference in Beijing and urged for enhanced bilateral cooperation in defense and military arenas. The Chinese defense chief called for an immediate ceasefire in the war-stricken Gaza Strip and the delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza. At least 34,356 Palestinians, many of them women and children, have been killed and 77,368 people have been wounded in the war that Israel began on 7th of October last year. The war began following a retaliatory operation by the Palestinian territory's resistance movements. Israel's brutal military onslaught has been supported militarily and politically by Israel's Western allies, including the United States and France. Meanwhile, China's special envoy to the Middle East has said Iran is a special partner for Beijing in West Asia, appreciating Tehran's measures in the region. China's special envoy to the Middle East, Zhai Jun, made the remarks on Friday during a meeting with Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister for Political Affairs, Ali Bagheri Chani. The meeting took place in Moscow on the sidelines of the consultations of Deputy Foreign Ministers and special envoys of the BRICS Group of Emerging Economies. The meeting was on Middle East. China's Special Envoy for Middle Eastern Affairs, Zhai Jun, condemned the Israeli regime's recent terrorist attack against Iran's diplomatic premises in Damascus, Syria, and thanked Tehran for its actions in defense of the Palestinian people's rights. China is Iran's largest trading partner. Both countries are subject to different levels of illegal sanctions imposed by the United States. They have enjoyed close ties in recent years, particularly after the United States reinstated sanctions on Iran's economy in 2018, after unilaterally withdrawing from the 2015 nuclear deal. The two countries signed a landmark 25-year partnership agreement in March of 2021 in an attempt to strengthen their long-standing economic and political alliance. The deal was announced during President Xi Jinping's visit to Tehran back in 2016. It sets the outlines of China-Iran cooperation in political, cultural, security, defense, regional, and international domains for the next 25 years. Earlier, on Friday, 26th of April, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister for Political Affairs, Ali Bagheri Chani, held talks with Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister and Special Presidential Representative for the Middle East, Mikhail Bogdanov. The two men discussed bilateral relations between Tehran and Moscow, as well as various regional issues. In an address to the BRICS meeting on Thursday, Bagheri Chani called on the member states to play a role in putting an immediate stop to Israel's crimes against Palestinians during Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. He also underlined the need for sending humanitarian aid to Gaza, urging the complete withdrawal of the Israeli military forces from the besieged Palestinian territory. The Al Mayadeen television network has also covered the same story. Iran and China's defense ministers discussed ways of elevating military cooperation between the two countries and conferred on a host of regional issues. On the sidelines of the 21st meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization member states' defense ministers in Astana, Kazakhstan, on Friday, 26th of April, Iran's defense minister, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani, met and conferred with his Chinese counterpart, Dong Jun. Brigadier General Ashtiani praised China's stance on the ongoing developments in the region and its condemnation of Israel's attacks against Iran's embassy in Damascus, Syria. He emphasized the importance of enhancing cooperation and convergence between Tehran and Beijing, working on security issues in the region as well as the wider world. On the other hand, the Chinese Defense Minister Dong Jun condemned the Israeli attack on Iran's embassy building in Damascus and stressed that it breached international laws. Dong Jun further highlighted that China backs Iran's legitimate right to respond to Israel. He invited the Iranian Defense Minister Ashtiani to a security conference in Beijing, further emphasizing the importance of elevating bilateral cooperation in defense and military matters. The Chinese Defense Minister also urged an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and the delivery of humanitarian aid to the besieged territory. According to China's Xinhua News Agency, following phone discussions on 16th of April between China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi and the Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian, Iran said it was willing to exercise restraint following the retaliatory strikes on Israel. According to China's Xinhua News Agency, the Iranian Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian relayed to Wang Yi that the United Nations Security Council did not make a necessary response to this attack, and he referred to the 1st of April Israeli aggression on Iran's embassy in Damascus, Syria, saying Iran has the right to self-defense in response to the violation of its sovereignty. Hossein Amir Abdullahian said his country was willing to exercise restraint with no intention of escalating tensions further, given that the regional situation was very sensitive. The Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi responded that China strongly condemns and firmly opposes the attack on Iran's embassy building in Damascus, Syria, and sees it as a serious violation of international laws and as totally unacceptable. The Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi added, China appreciates Iran's stress on not targeting regional and neighboring countries, as well as its reiteration on continuously pursuing a good neighborly and friendly policy.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamati. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station. Choo choo ka-choo. It's the Youth Station for you. Here in the studio, we have Sister
Asma.
Sister Asma.
Assalamu alaikum.
And we have myself, Muzaffar Haider, at your service.
Thank you for yourself being here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Of course, same in here. Likewise. How do you define pain?
Pain, I don't know, like, you get injured in some way, I guess, and then there's pain receptors in your brain. It travels up your spinal cord, and then...
These days, everything is just like a trigger for pain. Everything
really?
Is painful.
Really?
Life has been so painful.
That sounds really awful and sad, sister. How is that?
How is that? When we're living in a world in which you have to see many things... like kids getting killed and you cannot do anything, then these images are going to create a pain inside your heart. And then this pain is going to get piled up because you cannot do anything.
Yeah.
Like, it might happen in a closer scale as well. Like, when you look around in your own city, I don't know, in your neighbors, you might see people who are suffering from poverty.
Yeah.
You see people suffering from a kind of a special disease or sickness, like a kind that does not have any cure.
Yeah.
And then everybody is suffering in a special, particular way.
Mm.
So all these things are pain. I know that there is a positive point to life as well, but I guess totally human beings have been created in pain.
Yeah.
That's actually the same notion that exists in the Holy Book of Quran. There is no way to separate people from pain. Like, that's a thing that has been interlaced with your soul.
Mm.
It's in your essence. And sometimes it has got good points to itself, like it would have some positive effects because it's going to let you think more. It's going to let you be more productive.
Right.
And sometimes, no, depending on the kind of person you are. Because sometimes we're so weaker than what we are feeling. There's a huge burden upon our shoulder, and those pains are going to be so destructive.
But which pain, you know, sometimes you have the pain of having to kind of suppress yourself for the sake of being accepted.
That's a different sort of pain, which is so sad and depressing.
Can you explain this? Like, I never understood it. Why would you, like, suppress yourself to be accepted by others? Is that something that I do? I'm trying to figure it out. I can't at the moment.
See, there is this maybe misunderstanding that might happen, in which if you become a kind person, you're not surpassing yourself in order to please other people. You're practicing what humanity has put inside of you as a burden.
Right.
Like, for example, if there is a person who always treats you wrong, you don't necessarily have to have a lot of interaction with those people. But when it happens, out of, I don't know, modesty, politeness, out of the fact that you do not wish anyone any harm, you try to be this philanthropist sort of a person who does not do any harm to other people. You keep it kind, and you just make it not look like it's a war in between you. These kind of people are not called people-pleasing kind of a person. The people-pleasing person would do anything to make everyone satisfied with them.
I see. Okay, well, if the ceiling was, like, falling down, it's gonna crush everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to suppress everybody. But then, like, you allow it to suppress you, and, like, it... Like, you hold it up so that everybody else can be okay. Is that still sacrificing? See what I mean? So I'm yes, asking, like, how do you suppress yourself? Like, which part of yourself are you suppressing? Your personality? Your mood?
Maybe it depends on your intention. The whole difference is going to be differentiated with your intention.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to recognize what you're doing is a kind of suppressing yourself as in a negative point. You try to cut yourself short. You try to swallow your character in order to get fit in a special context.
Okay.
This is going to be called suppressing yourself.
Okay. Can you give me an example of when this has happened with you?
With me?
Yeah, because I need something practical here to...
I do not really... I rely too much on what other people might think of me. So, therefore, I don't think I'm a sort of a person who would do a lot of interaction with other people to get put in such a situation where I have to suppress myself. But there are situations in which, for example...
Because I think I'm pretty similar in that sense. Don't suppress myself. So, I think it's like maybe we're not qualified to talk about this. Yeah.
Well, we have seen examples, but the problem is that sometimes examples are not on top of your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
But we can relate to the things we just imagine in our own mind. Like, for example, there are people who would, like, you have to forget about your dignity to go for some special sort of actions or jobs or interaction with other people, they do it because of the fact that they just want to be an accepted person in that society, mm-hmm. in that context, mm-hmm. in that group of people. Like, I know these group of friends are not so much of good people, but since they are the prominent groups in, for example, among the relatives or in the school or at the university, I try to get close to them. I try to make myself a part of them, forgetting about all my rules, all my borders, forgetting about my dignity, most importantly.
Mm-hmm.
I forget about my character just to get accepted according to the norms of some special group of people.
You still didn't give me a practical example from your...
It's because I told you, I just don't remember a practical example, but these are close, I guess. So, just as we're thinking about a practical example, let's go for a break and then we'd be back. Anyway,
Muslims wash themselves in the bathroom, right? After mm-hmm. they use the toilet, they wash themselves. But this is very, very embarrassing to explain to your school friends when you're around 10 to 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always like, I can't go to the toilet in the school. Boys' toilet in a school in the UK.
Of course
they're the, not. They are the worst places in the world. They are disgusting. So yeah, you can't use it. And then one time I was having a discussion with my friends and I was like, yeah, so yeah, but you do wash yourself when you go to the shower, right? And they were like, oh no, we don't wash ourselves there either. And I was so shocked and disgusted that this is, to cleanliness is looked down upon, right? In that sense. And it's just, I can't believe it. Anyway, when Corona came and then everybody was like, scrambling over each other for toilet paper. You remember that yeah. was happening in the West and they were just going crazy over toilet paper and they were like pushing over old ladies in the supermarkets to just like get their toilet rolls and stuff. At that time, many of the Muslims, well, I know one brother in the UK
mm-hmm.
and he was like, listen, he told his white non-Muslim friends, just wash yourselves. And he gave them one of those, we call it a lota. It's like a thing. Because they don't have hoses over there, do they? Over here in Iran, most yeah. houses have like these hose pipes. Over there, you don't have that. So you have to have this kind of jug or bottle next to the thing. It's called a lota. And then he gave that to his white non-Muslim friend. And he said, use this. And he was so thankful. You know, so... After a long time, you gain this maturity and you start to understand that you can actually be yourself. And you
and
should
express yourself.
Yeah. In reality, I should have had the courage to be there, like, you guys are disgusting. You don't even wash yourselves.
Yeah.
But I didn't. And therefore, I was suppressing myself in order to just fit in.
Yeah. And I guess that happens a lot when you're younger. When you're out of school, this might happen a lot because you do not have the courage to stand for yourself, to speak up, to express yourself. And just as I said, you want to be accepted by the majority of your classmates, by the majority of people who have impact in that society. So that's why you forget about your own self, your mm-hmm. own character, just to get fit in.
Yeah.
Which I guess as you get older, you would understand that the only thing that you have to fit in are the rules that are set by Allah, and all the restrictions and rules that are there. and have been planned for us and have been clarified for us by the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So, just speaking of the notion of misfit, we already know that sometimes the things we believe in, which are right, are not accepted by the majority of people. And those majority of people are not going to be the criteria for what we are doing. The criteria is only what Allah has set for us and whatever the Holy Book of Quran is telling us. That's the only thing we have to stick to.
Mm-hmm.
The other stuff, like what these people are going to think of me, like what these majority of people are going to be enemy against me, these things are not going to matter too much.
Yeah, yeah.
And we should not care about it too much. Mm-hmm, we should not put too much of emphasis on that.
Yeah.
Like, try to accept this very fact that sometimes you alone is going to make too many changes and you do not have the approval of all the people and of all the members of society. Mm-hmm. If you're doing the right thing, then express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And do not let go of it just because or in the expense of the fact that, okay, don't just let it go just because the majority of people do not approve of it.
Yeah.
Also, we have it in the Holy Book of Quran that it is not with the number of people that the change is going to occur.
Mm-hmm.
It's with how decisive you are and how right is the intention that you have.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are just a small group of people who wish to do something and they're not approved by other people in the society, but eventually and in the end, they are going to make everyone believe in what they say. Or even if not that, then God is enough. The fact that He is satisfied with you is the only thing that matters.
So yeah, that's it, guys. Be brave and bold in what you believe in. Never be shy. And, you know, it's often the thoughts that you have in your mind are often the right thoughts. And remember, it all goes back to that internal hujjah, which is actually pointing you in the right direction. And sometimes you find yourself in a society or amongst people who are doing the opposite of what is right, and you need to have the courage to say, this is wrong.
Exactly.
At the same time, you need to recognize that sometimes the society that you're living in is actually doing the right thing, and it's on the right direction. Inshallah, may we find such a society. In that case, we need to be with the jama'ah and with the congregation.
Very true.
That's all we have time for. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif,
Ya Latif,
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Allah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
26 days into the Israeli genocide in Gaza, the regime pushes its massacre of civilians by airstrikes and artillery fire. Palestinian resistance fighters fire a barrage of rockets from southern Lebanon into Israeli-occupied territories. And Iran condemns Washington for its violent crackdown on pro-Palestinian protests, which have swept university campuses across the U.S. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.